My theory, and it's fully a theory, is that we need a model that flexes to the circumstance because neither of those work perfectly. And typically you see it, it's like it's working fine and they adjusted because of a good reason to be that way, but then the circumstances change. So how do you develop something that is adaptable enough for the circumstances, but then can still use all those components,
yeah,
right?
This is All Quiet on the Second Front, a podcast where boring conversations around defense tech and national security come to die. Join me, Tyler Sweat, and my Second Front comrades as we dismantle the mundane, cut through the bureaucratic BS to demystify the world of defense tech. But be warned, this is not a typical government podcast. Ready to get weird? This is a Soulfire production. What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Tyler Sweat. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of All Quiet on the Second Front, the podcast where boring defense talk comes to die. I'm very excited to have good friend, longtime friend, classmate, and current global public sector CTO at Snowflake, Winston Chang, with us today. What's up, brother?
What's up? We do go back.
We go way back.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Before we were fancy.
I was going to say to when we were dumb and young, but I'm not sure like dumb part has changed.
Yeah, it hasn't changed
all that much.
Not one bit. Just old now. So like we usually open this with a little bit of who you are, what you're up to. I've had the benefit of knowing you for 20 something years at this point, but tell the folks a little bit about Winston, background, who are you? What are you working on now?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we originated in the same place coming out of the academy, and I kind of ping-pong balled around in my career. So I went into finance, worked at a hedge fund, went through the big crash, actually worked those derivatives specifically, went to commercial consulting, right? Started a couple companies, went into government consulting, and ended up doing transformation, which in government is always technology, right? It's always technology-led because that's where the budget comes from. So that works pretty well coming from like a quant background, right? Yep. It's easy to become a data scientist, like all that background exists there. And then found myself doing this because I did an implementation and I was like, oh, this is a game changer. And got lucky, time opened up, right? Spot opened up. And so here I am with you. With also a, you know,
full circle,
a very interesting career coming to where you are. So really excited that I can be on, what are we at, season two?
Season two, heck yeah.
Season two.
It's a real thing now.
Yeah. I was like, you know, when is Tyler gonna ask me? Like, what more do I need to do to earn this man's respect?
So give a little snippet and then we'll dive into it. You know, I think everybody knows what Snowflake is, what you do. Like the 30 second, you look like.
I don't think everyone in this space.
In this space.
What's Snowflake?
Yeah, okay, fair. That's a
commercial
fair point.
100%.
So yeah. Flash a brief, right? Like we're not going to go all into like, what is Snow? Like here's the commercial, but like a brief, how should folks think about what sort of you being the global pub sector CTO at Snowflake means?
Yeah. Okay. Really brief analogy of what Snowflake is. If we think of next gen platforms in terms of like, fighter planes and every sort of platform we think of in DoD, Snowflake is your next gen data platform, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, you like that? You like that? It just does everything, right?
Wow.
Like it's fully optimized. You know, you don't have to worry about the bottom part of the stack. You focus on what you need to do. You train specifically for that piece. Yep. We have obviously all the plugins for AIML, you know, we do all that, but you got all the coding languages in it. You don't, it's like, you're not just SQL, right? Yep. You've got containers so you can choose your GPUs, right? You've got tons of security and it's fully optimized in terms of speed, right? And scale. And another one caveat I'd put is specifically for Snowflake is cloud only, right? Because the only way you achieve that, frankly, is you have to be in the cloud. So there's a nuance with DoD in that sense, right?
Because
we can't fulfill 100% of everything.
Yeah, which I think, and that there's that jumping off point where it gets really, really interesting. Because we in that sort of broader technology industry have seen sort of the power of the cloud, the power of being able to leverage the cloud, leverage access, leverage some of those capabilities that maybe otherwise we have historically not been able to, whether it's on-prem, it's on a server, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
As you look at what you guys are doing commercially and what you've seen commercially, take that sort of all that experience, take the Snowflake out of it and talk about disconnected air-gapped, fragmented? How should companies or founders or teams, whatever, who are thinking about building for or bringing applications into defense, intel, national security, even think about access, lack thereof, integration with data in different environments?
Yeah, so I can't at all say that I've got, you know, my mind wrapped around this problem. It is an incredibly hard problem. And, you know, I'd be surprised if we figure out in the next decade, to be honest, right? But what I can say is, like, there are certain key first principles that we've seen in the commercial side and that we know need to be accounted for when we're thinking about very much our distributed sort of way that the architecture is going to look like for DoD. The first is that you have to have that network effect, right? And granted, we don't have the constraints that DoD has in terms of, like, all the edge computing.
Yep.
But it's not that it doesn't exist, right? Manufacturing has edge computing. There are plenty of use cases, medical,
yep,
healthcare, right? Where that occurs. We just don't have it at, like, you know, quite at the mission level that DoD has. But the value of the network effects of connecting data is just incredible, right? And I think of data in terms of, like, vertical and horizontal. We've been all about big data, better models, right? But when you think of, like, any AI, they talk about parameters. The more parameters they have, you're not talking about horizontal.
Yeah.
So that interconnection, that network effect is giving you the horizontal. And so we need that. Right? Yeah. There's no way around it.
How are you seeing, or I guess maybe have you seen any interesting approaches where folks are thinking about trying to balance a network effect with maybe access to a cornered resource? Hey, it's a disconnected data set for a specific use case. And then how do you bridge the gap between the two? Because in this scenario, normally you're talking about sort of that cornered resource earlier, mm-hmm, in a journey, and then it starts to build into a network effect. I think, to your point, you've got the broad sort of enterprise network effect clearly demonstrated, but then all of these pockets become individual cornered resources, which,
right,
to, like, readers of the 9/11 commission just sounds like a bunch of vertical fiefdoms. And that's, I think we've seen that in how cloud adoption is happening across government, a whole bunch of vertical. Where are you seeing interesting approaches, even if it's just, to your, yeah, point, sort of like incremental step up sort of functionality in that sort of push to horizontal?
I would definitely say we're seeing a ton of discussion and movement toward hybrid cloud, right? Where you have to have that on-prem or that edge compute, and it has to have some form of
either the false choice of either or.
Yeah, yeah. And I almost think of it in terms of, like, an asynchronous web app or something like that, where you know, just at a much bigger scale.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's two, in my mind, at least two aspects of why those edge cases exist. One is it's a technology issue, right? And then the second is it's an actual business issue, right? Like, we are purposely siloed. Yeah. We all know where that's going. But what I would say is that that with what we're seeing with security, and, you know, Snowflake does this, but it's not just Snowflake. Like, there's a ton of other incredible tech companies working on security. So, like, one of the things we look at is data residency. The expectation across the board is that data residency is going to occur state by state level, yep, right? But it's going to be more than that. I've heard speculation that each individual state in the US might potentially get to data residency. And if you look at the value of data, once people recognize that value, I mean, it kind of makes sense that they're eventually going to legislate to the point of they don't want that value to leave because it's an owned asset, right? But we're hearing in the medical, right? Like, hospital by hospital talking about data residency, not leaving. So you need to be able to combine it. We know the network effect, again, first principles, right? You need that. So then the question is, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Right. And you can't do it without having a network. You can't do it without secure sharing. And then for me, it's sharing is something that we think about in a Boolean manner.
Okay.
It's either yes or no, on or off. Right. Yep. I don't think that's the case. Right. We really have to think of it in a full gradient. Right. And a dynamic gradient. And that really then addresses the whole business question.
Yep.
Right. And even to
run you into, like, a policy barrier, though, because now I think
you're in a spot that maybe doesn't fit in like an industrial age policy on access and all of that.
So
I agree philosophically. I agree with what you're saying on the gradient, though.
You're running a tech firm, right? Can we be honest and say that technology right now is not the issue?
Yes.
The biggest holdup is not technology, it's policy, governance, discipline, hygiene. Like, you name 100 things, it's processes, it's people, it's policy, and this.
I think there's a lot of debt. We use the term tech debt all the time. And I think everyone knows what tech debt is, but I think across all of those different organizational dynamics with people, process, policy, strategy, whatever it is, I think there's debt from historical transformation efforts or change efforts that have like started, stopped, and maybe it's because of the cyclical nature of appointees or, you know, elections or whatever. But I think you've got a little bit of fatigue, and then you've got a massive desynchronization issue when you look across even just USG, not even global PubSec, where everybody's sort of like done a transformation at a different time, a different start point, a different end point, and like ultimately ended up at a different config than everybody else. And now we've got nobody owns that. How do we actually integrate and set precedent? And I can't for the life of me figure out, like, is that an OSTP thing? Is that like an,
I think it's more fundamental. Yeah. So let's bring it back to leadership principles.
Yep.
We talk about core leadership principle is you push your decision-making down to the lowest level possible. Now, we've got tons of data. We're getting better at building dashboards. We're getting better at all of this stuff. What is naturally happening when that, when we do better with technology and frankly, we do better with data? Those decisions all get pushed up, right? That is not just the day-to-day operational decisions, that's policy, right? So if you're talking about, take DOD in terms of the structures, and you know, we've, you know, Rand put out a piece 20 years ago on the issues with flag officers and the core itself, and all these structural issues that we see just in terms of leadership, fundamentally is the same principle we're seeing in policy and technology. All those decisions, it all trickles from the same core root cause, right?
So you're almost talking about like a third wave knowledge age technologically.
Is that a Toffler thing?
It's a Toffler thing. It's a great framework. Why? I don't got to change it because it works. And but a second wave industrial approach to governance.
Yeah, the question is, you know, and I don't want to sound like a revolutionist, right? And,
well, it's a safe space.
This isn't like
nobody watching is going to judge you,
right? but how do you adjust a system that needs to adjust faster than the ability that the system can change, right?
Oh.
Because this is ultimately systems.
Well, and how do you do that? It is, but there's the counterbalance there is, because it's a yes and. How do you do that with no, like there's an acceptable degradation criteria to like current mission effectiveness that you've got to account for.
And unintended second, third order effects.
Yeah.
Right? Like economics for me, which is sort of like, I always look at like those other unintended effects or—
All the best people majored in it.
Exactly. Like for me, that's, I think the way I tend to look at it is there has to be a stable framework.
Yeah.
But the stable framework has to be highly adaptable.
I'll buy that.
Right.
All right. So flip that around.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about all of the challenges, the complexity, sort of the nuance, even around like understanding the political landscape, the organizational dynamics, the actual technical layer and all that. We're building teams, we're hiring, we are, How do you start to think about human capital and talent in this complicated environment we just talked about? And what are you assessing for? What are you, as folks are coming to you for guidance, how are you helping them think about frameworks or perspectives and stuff like that?
I think in my mind, the first thing that comes to mind are like the self-starters, self-learners. And especially in where I would say we are information rich across the board, you almost have to be a fully self-starter, fully self-educator, right? And then the second thing I think of, which I don't know if a lot of people hire for this, and I don't even see how people test for this, are basics. Because so you think of like, you're an operator, yep. right? Back in the day. You know, I've done martial arts my whole life. Like we did martial arts together.
We were right? martial art buddies.
Yeah, you know, stabbing each other left and right with dummy knives. And when it comes down to it, right, you do your first step, you learn, then you get up to the higher techniques. But once you start mastering those and you come back, you realize like, if you're gonna become a master in anything, you're mastering basics. That's it.
Yep.
Right? You go talk to any master martial artist, any master operator, you know, who goes to the range, what are they working on? They're doing dry shooting, right? They're doing all of the basics to just keep it so clean, right? Same thing in martial arts, everything you do, basics, basics, basics. But we don't test for that really,
yeah.
right? Like we look for, oh, what's your education? What's your, you know,
what school you go to? What company did you come from?
Yeah.
It's like a pedigree.
Yeah. Right? But how do we test for basics and how do we look for that? I mean, all the good things like T-shaped skills, but that's Silicon Valley speak for something that the military has always known, right? At least from at least Vietnam on.
Yeah.
Right? We've already sort of had that inculcated into, I like that word, into our understanding. Yeah. So, yeah.
How do you think about like organizational structure? Like things like there are all these different competing schools of thought right now on span of control and organizational design, and to go back into your sort of blocking and tackling and the basics, but also organizational sort of like information asymmetry and how to like remove that. So like Jensen, right, at NVIDIA has what, 40 direct reports. And when he transmits a decision, he transmits to everybody. So there's no asymmetry. That to a lot of folks sounds chaotic as hell. Right. And then on the other side, you've got, you know, other organizations who, you know, each team has an NDA and like you don't talk to the pod next to you about what you're working on. You're doing a thing.
Yep.
And there's no asymmetry because you have no freaking information. And then there's stuff in between, like the old school sort of span of control, rule of four.
Right.
How are you thinking about, I mean, like what's working now, maybe what's going to work in the future? And is it company dependent? Is that people dependent, leader dependent scenario? What's that look like?
So I have not had the pleasure like you to run a company at scale. I've run a couple of companies, but not at the scale that you're talking about. But I've worked for a number of different companies and I've seen the fully matrix version all the way to like the top down version and everything in between. My theory, and it's fully a theory, is that we need a model that flexes to the circumstance.
Okay.
Because neither of those work perfectly.
Yep. And there's no absolute.
Yeah. And typically you see it, it's like it's working fine and they adjusted because of a good reason to be that way, but then the circumstances change. So how do you develop something that is adaptable enough for the circumstances, but then can still use all those components?
Yeah.
Right?
It's almost as if we're assessing for the basics and the fundamentals and sort of the blocking and tackling, and either saying we're also assessing for a degree of like data-driven flexibility, or we're building that in organizationally as like a governance model. Like the best way I've heard it put, I think it was Tony DiMartino who said it to me, was like, hey, you should 80% of the time be like myopically focused on the mission and the outcome and all that. And about 20% either headspace or like programmed in process should be heretical. Mm-hmm. Is this right? Is this the right strategy? Is this the right way? Is this the right idea? Is this the right product? And sort of fighting almost to build in that like red team capability, that kind of counterbalance. And then I think the missing sort of link is how I've always explained it, given this conversation, is okay, what does that feedback loop look like? That if that 20%, you know, shits out like a golden nugget, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
How do you bring that back into the organization and actually make that an implemented change?
So let me overlay another thought on top of that.
Top of the nugget.
Yeah. No, not because I completely agree, right? Is technology. Like, what does technology do to a society, do to its markets, right? And in my mind, what it does is it smooths out the cyclical cycles so they become more natural to the actual business itself, right?
Yeah.
So if you think of the most unnatural aspect of that is quarterly reportings for anything that's, frankly, a publicly traded company, yep. right? It is unnatural for every company to meet a quarterly, the business cycle just doesn't work that way. But as technology has come into play, you've seen a lot of these business cycles become more and more aligned to what the cycle is. It's like seasons, right?
Yeah.
There is a natural flow of how things work, and each company can start gravitating to what its natural flow will look like. So in my mind, technology, as it becomes, you know, as it adds that fuel to it, to what you're saying, takes that from like a black swan, where we just have no clue what the next circumstance is going to look at, and you need that constant vigilance, to more of a gray swan, where you can start seeing some trends, but you have to be pretty specific in context to your company or your industry or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to think about it, sort of smoothing that curve out and allowing for more sort of like evolutionary experiences than maybe revolutionary.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a net positive there.
Yeah, yeah. Physics, right? Like, it explains nature, but there's aspects to nature that are just. Yep. Yeah, that are fundamental, right? So how do we learn from those?
Yeah. All right, so we've had an interesting conversation both about, I think, this current landscape and some of the challenges organizationally from a policy standpoint, from a sort of like tech federation standpoint. We've talked about sort of the humanity in all of this and how do we build teams? How do we think about building organizations? Two last questions are sort of the structured ones here. I'm going to add a new one because I want to see what you say. The first one is, what are you most excited about right now? The second one is, if you were king for a day, and as we look across sort of this whole landscape, what's the one thing you sort of wave the magic wand and change, and why?
So first one is, you're probably along the same lines, like, we spent a good part of our, I don't even want to call it early career, the first half of our career pursuing our career, yeah. right? Pursuing excellence, pursuing, you know, that experience. I really started to come to this, like, what else is left in life? And I would say this right here, being able to work with friends, yes, being yes. able to just, you know, and to some extent, like, we're at a position where that comes into play,
yeah.
right? And there it's not without its circumstances yeah. bringing that together. But even like if we think, you know, I think back maybe 10 years when we first became managers yeah. and we could hire, all of a sudden your network is different because now you're passing resumes to people like, yeah. hey, you should hire this person or I can help this person out, right? Yeah. Like, what can you do for the community is so different and it changes now again, right? But I think a lot about that. I look forward to that because what's the point of money or success or your resume, your degree in a frame on the wall yep. if it doesn't have that like interpersonal piece okay. to it, right? Yeah. So I look forward to that.
I love that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's that for me. And second question was—
King for a day. Yeah, wave the wand, what do you change and why?
So I don't know if you read Gates' piece a couple of weeks ago on foreign affairs, yep. politics. I figure out how to make it. I mean, it's a necessary evil. You know, and we have good politicians come in and out, but I don't even know how to solve it. I would, yeah. my wand waving would be like, this gets solved so that it's good. That's all yeah. I want is good.
Yeah. I mean, good does become great, I think. Yeah. So I think it's a tough, I think it is, especially sort of how we came up, right? I mean, freshman at West Point when the towers got hit,
like yeah.
probably the most pivotal time in our lives, hopefully. You know, going forward and hoping that we can sort of like, and maybe it's always been this bad and we just didn't have access to the information,
yeah,
you know. But it sure feels like it's gotten increasingly like polar.
I feel like,
and that's bad for yeah, America.
I feel like a kid with like parents going through a horrible divorce.
Yeah.
Right. Where you're just stuck in the middle of two people fighting and you're just like, and why can't we all get along?
Drinkers.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. yeah. If not, you know, some of those other things that
yeah.
came out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. That's a really good answer. I think that is one of those where like the country wins and the world wins. if we can start to focus on those principles like at a national level.
Yep.
Heck yeah, yeah, man.
I mean, that's leadership.
That's great.
Right from the beginning.
That's good. That's so. The best answer yet, I think. Yeah. Thanks for, as always, brother. I mean, it's tremendous to get to your point, to get to work with friends, to get to be in a spot where we can collaborate and actually have impact.
Yep.
I think it's something that if you flash back to us being like hand-to-hand combat instructors with Bernard 20-something years ago, the three of us now in these group chats wouldn't have believed a word anyone was saying. So I'm eternally grateful for that. Grateful to call you a friend and a colleague, and grateful you spent some time here today. So thanks, brother.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I appreciate it too.
Thanks for listening. Wouldn't be a podcast without some show notes, so check them out to learn more about Second Front and what we're up to. Stay weird.